Maybe better. Folks, and welcome to another edition of the Trinity Tims. I am, as usual, joined by Joe McHugh from Video Cells and my other colleague James Forrest from the Celtic blog. And I, of course, am Eric Knott from Read Celtic. We have a jam-packed agenda for tonight. Plenty to talk about after a weekend of lots and lots of things we can discuss. But first and foremost, we will start with the Scottish Cup tie against Dundee at Celtic Park on Saturday evening, 5:30 kickoff. Well, the game itself was a display of absolutely staggering refereeing, which we'll touch on later. But when we talk about the actual game itself, we huffed and we puffed. And eventually, in the last second of injury time, we blew the house down. We blew the Dundee house down with a goal from our debutant junior. What's his surname again, guys?
Adamu.
Adamu. Junior Adamu scored a peach of the back heel into the net from a lovely ball from Sebastian Tunecti. And the 24,120 fans that attended Celtic Park lifted the roof off the place. So chances are that they felt, in the absence of 35,000 to fill the stadium to capacity, that they had to make noise on behalf of those that were missing. The atmosphere was fantastic, to be fair, at the game. It was a good game of football if you had a referee that would actually let it flow correctly. But there are so many talking points and an awful lot of them negative because of the way the game was refereed and the officials that were selected for the game. But first of all, we'll talk about the game. And I will say, to be fair to Dundee, they didn't, you know, they came to play. They didn't shut up shop or, you know, try and conserve their energy until the end of the game and then come out maybe for the last 10, 15 minutes. They did make a game of it. That was aided and abetted by the freedom they were given too, though, to absolutely assault some of our players with little or no repercussions. But as cup ties go, it had plenty of excitement. But you knew when Celtic got that equaliser, it was only going to go one way after that because it absolutely, you know, blew Dundee away. I mean, I totally sapped the confidence out of them after conceding that goal so late. So I'm going to go over to James first, and I'm going to ask him for his opinion on the game. James, there's so much, as I said, to talk about. We'll touch on the refereeing later, but the actual game itself, how did you feel it went?
Oh, it was terrible. We were absolutely terrible. Whatever cohesion there looked like being in the past few weeks was simply not there at all. It was an awful game of football. And I tried to, like, keep my head up. You know, when they scored the goal, there was a lot of people online were messaging me and were like, we're in trouble. And I'm like, calm down. We've got this. We'll still win this. Then 5 minutes to go, I emailed them back and I was like, I might have been a bit hasty in saying that we would win this. Two minutes after the final whistle, I emailed them all back saying, I might have been too hasty in saying that I was too hasty when I said we would win this. We'll definitely win it now. So it was one of these days. It was terrible. I wish I could take some kind of heart from what happened in the game. I mean, I take heart from the fact that we didn't quit, that we played for the 9,900, however many minutes Keith Jackson thinks get added on. But that's about all you can take off it. The fact that we didn't quit, that we played to the whistle, and we got the goal. And the only other thing that you can sort of be happy about is that Tunecti turned the game. He came on and looked like the player we've been hoping to see. I thought he was excellent. I thought that McGowan played a good part in it and all. And obviously our new boy got his debut goal when it was an important one. But God, man, no, we need to be better than that. We can't possibly take that level of performance that was left this season to get him to even contemplate. Need to be big improvements.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to agree with that assessment, James. But I suppose the one thing that you could say is that Martin O'Neill does seem to have the Midas touch. Whatever it is, whatever he instills in the players, whatever he said to Tunecti going out onto the field of play, and Junior Adamu as well, obviously, there's just something. I mean, when I was watching that game and when I saw the way that the officiating was going and that nothing was going our way in that regard and they were going to disrupt play, that Ryan Lee was going to disrupt play as much as he possibly could, I genuinely thought it was going to be one of those days. I did not see a goal coming. So obviously, when it went in and at the time it went in, it was utter ecstasy. It was fantastic. Like, you know, it's definitely the O'Neill never say die attitude. Just keep going and going and going and going until the bitter end, and that's what we did. And that just seems to be the magic that Martin O'Neill has injected into the side. It's awful to watch at times. There's no two ways about that. It is awful to watch at times. But they keep grinding away, and they keep getting the results. So I'll pass over to Joe. Would your assessment be pretty much on par with James, what James had to say? Yeah.
Yes, that was horrific. We learned more about what we can't do. And with the form of our two lone strikers, I think you've got to switch to 4-4-2. Trying to find two wingers has proved impossible all season. You might get a turnout of Yang at times, you might get a turnout of Tunecki, but we're never getting both of them. And between Adamu and Kvarnka, butchered his name, it looks like we might have two decent strikers there, and they might even be able to form a partnership. But beyond that, there wasn't much to take from the game. Hitati and Bernardo, they're in limbo, they're running down time, they're fed up with things, they've been here too long, it's not happening for them, and it says a lot that we don't have any other options. Mercado was a great hope towards the end of last season based on two very brief substitute appearances, but going to Partick Thistle on loan in October and coming back, not in the squad. I think he's on the bench away to Bologna, but there's very little there, and that's why the Ox is going to be rushed in. I would think the Ox must be involved on Wednesday night. If he's been training with Arsenal for 3 months, we're playing a team that hasn't won a football match since August. He must be able to play 15, 20 minutes against Livingston to get a proper assessment of him. But there's very little to take from it. I admire your optimism, Eric, that the Martin O'Neill Midas touch, but there's only so much you can do with that Midas touch, and relying on that is very dangerous. I mean, his first game back, second time around, he scored four against Dundee United, looked very good. It was four going on more, but just everything about the club's debilitating just now. The fans aren't there. The fans that are there aren't really there. The back the team sacked the board lot. There's a hell of a lot of grumbling and moaning going on at the players, folk leaving early, etc., etc. There's nothing positive out there just now, other than the fact that Martin O'Neill is doing everything to keep everything on the goal. But when you look at that run of fixtures coming up, four successive away matches, if you're banking on Martin O'Neill's Midas touch, good luck, because it's great. Football's about small margins, and he's able to turn small margins in Celtic's favour. But it's asking a hell of a lot for him to keep it going over those four away games in 11 days, which would be daunting at any time, would be daunting when you get a full squad, would be daunting with last season's team, and relying on a 73, soon to become 74-year-old going into those fixtures is highly risky, but that's a position that the Celtic board have taken us into.
Absolutely. But just before we move away from the game itself and onto the refereeing debacle that was throughout the whole thing, do we not feel that now that Martin knows what he has in terms of what he got in the window, obviously we know they were all loan signings and they're stopgaps, but he knows what he has to work with now until the end of the season. He should have a few coming back to injury. And now he can sort of figure out what way he's going to rotate things, because as we know, and we'll touch on this later, rotation is going to have to be the way, proper rotation and smart rotation is going to have to be the way going forward for the rest of the season, because the fixture list is just so congested. So I know we're riding our luck a lot, but James, do you feel that now that Martin knows what he's got to work with and he's going to figure out a system in the way that he's going to work it, do you feel that we'll start to see things become a bit more coherent in the games that are coming up?
Well, the system will be coherent. But there's always going to be a certain amount of incoherence when you've got to change personnel every week, and we are going to have to change personnel every week. Absolutely unbelievable draw last night. Unbelievable for the point of view that I find it hard to believe that it... I'm not even going to go there. But let's just say that if it was an opportunity to end their season, I probably would have put the hot and the cold balls in the bowl as well. it's the worst possible outcome. And yet, there is a part of me that wonders. O'Neill had beaten this guy at Hampden with a lesser squad than he's got right now. I wonder if the statistic that our Savconian friend was quoting about not having beat them in 18 months or 90 minutes isn't going to come back to haunt them big time, because there's no better way to end that run than by beating them twice in a week in their own stadium in front of their own fans in two different competitions. And anybody can do it, this guy can do it. It's a big ask. Especially as we're going to rotate this squad every other game now. If people are going to have the legs for it. I mean, Stuttgart, I don't know. Stuttgart is a worst-case scenario game for me, because if we win the home tie, Martin will want to go out there and win. I don't know why he wants to go out there and win. I couldn't hate saying this. I hate the position we're in this season where we don't want progress in Europe, because it will absolutely kill the team. It will absolutely annihilate this team's chance to win in the league. But I mean, it's one of the things you've just got to eat it. I would go to Stuttgart with a B team, even if we have a chance to go through. We need these two extra games. We need a dose of the crabs. Honestly, I don't know where we're going to play them. I don't know how we're going to play them. I know that they'll come at the worst possible time. For me, that game is the one that we can afford not to take very seriously. Aberdeen away, you don't know what kind of Aberdeen team, what kind of Aberdeen management team there's going to be by that time. So that's a concern. Ordinarily, if it was just the two games at Ibrox, you wouldn't be worried. I genuinely wouldn't be worried if it was just the two games at Ibrox. But having Stuttgart and O'Neill's obvious desire to go as far as he can in the tournament, that worries me. Aberdeen worries me. Sandwiched in the middle of these games, and it's just horrible. I heard that draw last night, and I hoped everybody was joking, but they weren't.
It is, I guess, the level of fixture congestion that we were all dreading, and the fact that it's four away fixtures in 10 days, it just couldn't be any harder than it is. And it's sort of like shades of, I suppose, 2003, when we had such fixture congestion with the UEFA Cup in the run up to the UEFA Cup final. That was tough, but we still, I suppose, you know, on Beach Ball Sunday, we went to Ibrox and we beat them. I know we were pipped at the post. What we don't want this season is a scenario like that where we are pipped at the post. But I think, Joe, I think Tuesday or Wednesday night will tell us a lot about how good or how bad Danny Rowell is when he goes to take on Motherwell at Fir Park. I think we'll find out a lot about them on that night. It depends as well who the officials are. But I mean, do you think that it's going to be really, really tough to negotiate that bunch of fixtures? And do you think that Martin is going to, you know, put together a coherent strategy to rotate to actually manage these games as best he can? with Stuttgart being the least of those priorities?
To answer your question, Stephen McLean and John Beaton are on Wednesday. So, Tav Penner, celebrated record breaker, expect that one. But it's not particularly about them, it's about Celtic, it's about us. And we've got our weakest squad in five seasons. Most of the Celtic players that are playing just now, most of the ones that played on Saturday evening, 5:30, most of them will be leaving the club at the end of this season, whether they're the loan players or whether they're Hatate, Bernardo or others. I'd be amazed if Liam Scales wants to hang around for another season of abuse. If Austin Trusty there was an offer apparently from Fiorentina in January, Austin Trusty's agent will be saying, let's get this done and dust and get out of here, because Celtic's a mess. It's not a club you want to be pinning your future to. They've got an interim manager, an interim chairman, and a waste of space as a CEO, a guy that will not get any sort of job of any seniority, and certainly nothing like the pay once you leave Celtic as CEO. So Celtic's not a good place to be in just now. So it's not particularly about Danny Roll and his four signings. It's about us. Martin O'Neill, he might be able to get something out of it, but he's not going to progress in the league, Scottish Cup and the Europa League into March. That's not happening. The Europa League's the one that we can dispose of. Well done, we've reached the knockout stage, picked up some appearance money. But the priority has got to be the two games at Ibrox and Aberdeen in between. If we are capable of taking a draw in the league and progressing in the Scottish Cup, that will be decent, and we can hopefully win at Aberdeen. But the squad is so weak. He's got about 12, 13, maybe a push 14 players he can trust. Adamu probably looks at someone that can be added to that list. I think Hatate can be subtracted from that list. Tunetki is looking stronger, but more as an impact sub. So it's up to the manager to get the best out of the squad. I mean, if you've real rotation, you've got four or five strong options on the bench. Keep harping back to it. But Ange was able to bring on Forrest, Abada and Giakoumakis to replace Maeda. If you started with Maeda, Kyogo and Abada, you could then bring on Forrest, Giakoumakis and Jota. So that's what you should aim for. It's entirely possible, but thanks to Paul Tisdale and Matt Lowell, that's not the case. So it's entirely on the manager to keep the show on the road. And he's the best guy for it, absolutely. Again, he's not going to be here at the end of this season. We'll not revisit the director of football role with Sean Maloney's manager role. But it's not about other teams, it's about Celtic. If we can win our games, then we can win this league. If we get back from Aberdeen within a point or two, either side of the top of the league, we should be in reasonable shape, because in the split we'll have Rolls, Mob and Hearts at home. But it's game by game with Celtic at the minute. They could have slipped on Saturday. The Falkirk game was in the balance for a good bit, etc., etc. Livingston, I think, should be very straightforward on Wednesday night. But Kilmarnock will be awkward because of the plastic pitch, and Neil McCann will have them booting lumps out of Celtic. And then after that, it's into that horror run of fixtures. So we've just got to hope Martin O'Neill can keep things going. It's not especially what Hearts are doing or what the other lot are doing. It's all on Martin O'Neill getting the best out of the squad that he's been left with.
Yeah, that's the reality. He has to get the best out of what he has. And the thing is, he is getting the best. He's getting the results. But as you kind of alluded to earlier on, there is a chance that our luck could run out in certain games or games that really matter. So look, we'll move on to the refereeing fiasco of Saturday night. I mean, where do I start with that? Look, the tackle from Simon Murray on Kieran Tierney, for me, was a red card all day long.
It wasn't Simon Murray. It was somebody, Cameron, something or other.
Simon Murray slid in him and got a yellow card. And he took him out. Remember, he was down for a while with that one as well. And then Cameron Congreve kicked him in the face. And that was only a yellow card as well. So, no, whatever about the Simon Murray one, I thought that was a sending off. But the Cameron Congreve one, there is no question. No question. Because the ball was miles away when he took that kick. And that kick was the epitome of endangering your opponent. Kieran Tierney was obviously concussed because he had to be taken off. If that had been a couple of inches above his nose, it was the side of his nose around that area where he was hit. If it had been a couple of inches higher, that was his eye socket. That was his eye. His sight possibly gone. If you got a boot into the eye at that force, that's going to do serious damage to your eye. And that could be the end of his career. That's how close that came. And, like, I don't know what it is with Kieran Tierney, but players seem to be booting seven different colours of shite out of him every time he's on the pitch. And they seem to be getting, like, it seems he's target number one. And they seem to get away with it. But that decision was astounding. And as for Ryan Lee, the referee, his remit, obviously he was briefed, disrupt play as much as you possibly can. Let Dundee get away with as much as you possibly can. And let's be honest about it. He let them get away with fucking murder on Saturday night. Absolute murder. And, like, you can't blame Dundee because Dundee are going to push the boundaries and see what they can get away with. And most teams now coming to Celtic Park are clearly understanding of what's going on with referees. They know what's going on with the referees and they know they can push the boundaries. And they do it. And clearly Dundee did that on Saturday evening. So I'll pass over to James. That, without doubt, I mean, there's a litany of offences in that game, but without doubt, it is one of the worst that I have seen in quite some time. And the fact that nobody at Celtic Park has even spoken about it is mind-boggling. But that's always been the case anyway. So your thoughts, James?
For years, people in the media and elsewhere have called us conspiracy theorists and loons for suggesting that maybe there are people at the SFA who don't like us very much, in spite of a mountain of evidence that suggests there are a lot of people at the SFA that don't like us very much. And the question that they keep throwing at us over and over again is, for a club that is under the cost to this extent and is discriminated against to this extent, you sure seem to win an awful lot. Well, there's a very easy answer to that. I was thinking about it today. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Farlap, the Australian racehorse from the 1930s or the 40s. Is one of the greatest racers of all time, anyway, right? Its record is as good as there has ever been in the sport, right? And the only way that the authorities in Australia could think to stop it from winning every race it entered was to handicap it. And so it ended up carrying more weight. And eventually they did stop it from winning by almost killing it in individual races, where it was carrying the equivalent of two freaking jockeys on its back. Right, and we have been good enough and strong enough for years that it hasn't mattered what referees and officials done. We can just keep winning. No matter how much they try and handicap us, we could just keep winning. And it's only because we've gone backwards and we've got weaker that this is now having an outsized impact. We came within seconds of going out of the Scottish Cup. And this is the kind of game we've all talked about on this podcast a million times, was in the post. There will be a game where everything is at stake, where there's something major on the line. And we will get penalised because the officials have let the opposition away with murder, or they've gave decisions that they should never have gave, or they have refused to give decisions they should have gave, and it will cost us at some point because we are now sufficiently weak that those things matter. And the weekend could very easily have been it. We only really have ourselves to blame. You look at that officiating in that game, and then you look at the lineup that the SFA sent to that game, and you can see there's only going to be one outcome if we're not absolutely on our best. And that's the weight that we carry every single time we go out for a major match now. And we're coming up against, as you guys have pointed out, Neil McCann's team is waiting for us in a couple of weeks. Then if he's still at Aberdeen, Mr. I Hate Celtic is going to be waiting for us in there, dugout. And then we've got the first game at Ibrox, where if we still have players capable of playing in that game after getting kicked out of the park in the previous two, they will kick us out of the park again to make sure that we don't have enough players when we come back a week later. We're asking for it. I mean, we're getting everything we deserve because we won't fight this stuff properly. And it's not a major thing that we're asking for here. Just take out of the loop any official who supports their club and don't let them referee games against us. This is, and I'm get tired of saying this, this isn't a majorly controversial request. This is standard practice in every other league in Europe. Every other league in Europe. Except this one. So, I genuinely don't know what we're waiting for. But we almost got it on Saturday. We almost got the crisis moment because of this. And honestly, the next few weeks, our whole season could unravel on the back of those games against those teams, because officials will let them get away with whatever they want. And genuinely, I don't know. If our board doesn't see the situation that we're in, I don't know. I genuinely don't know what they're waiting for. Something bad, and something bad will happen.
Our board doesn't see anything, so, and they never have, and they never will. So I wouldn't concern myself with that if I was you, James. Joe, like, probably one of the things that stood out to me most of all, exactly as James pointed out, was the lineup of officials for that game, which seemed and does make it seem like there was an agenda. And when you look, that then is reflected in the way that the game was refereed, and that whole push-pull debate on the penalty. Like, it's just an awful lot of it smacks up of make it up as you go along. It's bollocks. Like, it's just so, it's such transparent bollocks. That's the thing. It's so see-through. And, you know, then you have the situation where you have Keith Jackson today saying that the Ryan Lee's faulty watch gave Celtic the you know, the opportunity to go through. Just to get one thing straight on that, there was 5 minutes officially of injury time, and then Kieran Tierney got the kick into his face, and he was down for at least 3 to 4 minutes of that period while we went into injury time. And as far as I can see, Ryan Lee only played one extra minute on top of the fight that were already there. He didn't even take into account the stoppage or the length of the stoppage that you know, that Tierney was involved in and how long he was down for. So and we can touch on this as well. This is going to rear its ugly head, especially in that period of fixtures where things are going to be really tough, because we know the lineup of officials we're going to get in those games. Not to mind the games that Shane or that James has mentioned. But I mean, look, what are your thoughts? I mean, we have one of our commenters there saying that we were nearly knocked out of the cup because we were pish. That refereeing has nothing to do with it. I mean, people who still believe that there isn't an agenda there are completely missing the point. If they couldn't see that on Saturday night, you're never going to see it. So you're just turning a blind eye. It's that simple. But anyway, Joe, give me your thoughts on it. What did you, I mean, what was your overall, you know, perception of it?
Well, whether you play good, bad, or whatever, the laws of the game are actually still the laws of the game. You don't get tempered. If you're playing bad, then you expect decisions to go against you and just go on with it. The half-time intervention, clearly Willie Collum or Ian Maxwell getting in touch with Premier Sports to give them this contrived excuse explaining the difference between a push and a pull. Push and pull are not mentioned in the laws of the game, so that was made up. And surprise, surprise, after the match, no one asked Martin O'Neill about the Celtic penalty claim. And that's because Celtic's media buddies are all in on it. They don't want to raise contentious issues. But it all comes back to Celtic. Since July 2012, Celtic have been on mute. They suddenly found themselves a massive advantage in the Scottish game. I'm not as au fait as James with horse racing in Australia in the 1930s, but I can see the comparison. Celtic should be miles ahead. Generally, they are miles ahead. And the Celtic board are just happy to allow a levelling up exercise to make Scottish football more competitive. So for me, it started with Stephen McLean at the Inverness Cali Thistle semi-final in 2015. Celtic wrote to the SFA, probably never even bothered writing to the SFA, but on the club website, They wrote to the SFA seeking clarity, and that was the last we heard of it. And then December 2018 game at Ibrox, 6 days after it, Celtic had a three-point statement about John Beaton, about clarity for decisions, and we need accountability, blah, blah, blah. And lo and behold, Wednesday night, John Beaton and Stephen McLean are still combining in action. When Crawford Allen left the SFA, we had the straight-faced Mike Mulvaney, SFA president, saying, we carried out a worldwide search for a successor for Crawford Allen. And lo and behold, the ideal candidate is a member of the Lanarkshire Refereeing Association, Willie Collum. So Celtic don't say anything about it. They're quite happy to go along with it. And when you do that, you just encourage it. And that's why this, I was going to use some different words there. That's why this official, David Dickinson, is having the time of his life just now. Four matches involving his favourite club. We've all seen in Facebook, his family are zombies daft. They can't get enough of it. And they also detest Celtic. So I suspect David Dickinson's cut from the same ilk, and Celtic. David Dickinson refereed the game against Falkirk on last Sunday. It was a referee at Ibrox on Wednesday, and he was on VAR at Celtic Park on Saturday. Three paydays from his second employment stream within 7 days, and there'll be plenty more. But moan and complain all you like about the SFA, it's all down to Celtic, and they've been weak since July 2012. They were so desperate to see another club from Glasgow maintain their old firm rivalry that anything goes, and anything goes is now coming back to bite Celtic. It's very tight. We're way below strength compared to previous years. That puts things in the balance, and that's when the small margins can go against you. So we haven't mentioned Douglas Ross. Arujo Cross, whatever he's called, his cross that he managed to put out the park and swing it back in to bounce 3 yards from goal. There was James Forrest racing down the wing. Dre Wright got a touch in the ball and put it out for a corner, except Douglas Ross gave it as a goal kick. And then we had Luke McCown taking a corner, and the attention that Douglas Ross was paying to that was ridiculous. He was almost standing on the corner flag. Generally, assistant referees will stand 2 to 3 yards away from the corner, 2 or 3 yards away from the ball, so they're not interfering. Douglas Ross was making sure his presence was felt there. And another one, I was a bit slack with the Simon Murray, Kieran Tierney. What about Jan Dander on Yang? That was horrific. Came sliding in from distance, straight leg, going for his knee. Douglas Ross turned the other way not to get involved. The referee was quick. He saw it was a foul, and he decided it was worth a yellow card. While Yang got treatment, there's plenty of time for a VAR review. We never even got a VAR review. So, again, moan. It's all on Celtic. Celtic are very comfortable with it, very happy with it. It's a levelling up exercise, and that levelling up exercise could well go against Celtic in the remainder of this season. It'd be a surprise if it didn't.
Yeah, definitely. Look, we could dedicate the whole podcast to the whole refereeing scandal, if you want to call it that, but it's not going to change anything, as you say, Joe. It's just going to remain the same, and it's going to get worse. It's definitive that it's going to get worse throughout this season because of what's on the line. We're probably going to see the worst refereeing season that we have seen in probably modern history this season.
One good point getting made by that comment. The referee, they also act as a screening midfielder for our opponents. They just position himself in the way. If Celtic are knocking the ball around 30 yards from goal, try to find an opening, try to find a way through the defence, you can bet the referee's there. And you often see Celtic players sort of stopping and adjusting. It doesn't help them in any way. But I read someone say, when the referee is so close to the ball, just continually kick the ball against them. Keep kicking against them. And then he might start to back off and do different positions. But while he places himself there, you've got to play around him. Generally, you're up against 10 outfield players. You get 10 outfield players and a referee blocking your way 30, 35 yards from goal. It does get kind of difficult.
It does, definitely. But look, I mean, their modus operandi is to disrupt play in no matter what way they can. And, you know, when they are again blowing up for every, you know, the most minor of fouls, are, you know, they're not even fouls. It's just constant. We know that. We've talked about it time out of number. But we'll move on. And obviously we'll move on to, what would we say? This is going to be a talking point that generates a lot of debate. The boycott. And obviously, if we're looking at it from the Celtic Fans Collective and in the aftermath of the meeting that was held after the transfer window closed and the proposal for the boycott, it was a result. There was 24,120 people at Celtic Park. The, you know, it was nearly 36,000 shy of capacity. That is a statement. There are a lot of people out there who are anti-boycott. Everybody, and I will state this categorically, everybody is entitled to their own opinion. If people want to go to the football, they're more than welcome to go to the football. If people do not want to go to the football because they are sick and tired of mediocrity at Celtic Park, then that is their choice. But one of the things that I saw that was very prevalent on social media on Saturday evening was people almost wishing for Celtic to lose so that they could prove a point that the boycott was the cause of Celtic losing. Now, I touched on it earlier on there when I was introducing the pod, and I said that the atmosphere was actually off the scale on Saturday night. The 24,000 people that were in Celtic Park generated a serious amount of noise and they got behind the team. Whether that was because they felt they had to because of the boycott or because of what went on in the game, it doesn't really matter. The fact of the matter is that there was a fantastic atmosphere there on Saturday night. Had Celtic Park been full, I have no doubt it would have been even more fantastic. But you will never know, because you've got to feel it out whether it was because there was a half-empty stadium and that those were there felt they needed to back the team vociferously. It's just, you're never going to really know. But I'll go to you, Joe, on this one first. Like, it looks definitely that the boycott was a success based on the numbers that we are led to believe were at Celtic Park, and obviously the board being the chicken shits that they are wouldn't release the official figure, but the guys at the collective got the correct figure. So what's your opinion? Do you think it was a success?
Absolutely a success. Last season, Celtic, Saturday night, Scottish Cup ties against Kilmarnock and Raith Rovers. There's 40,000 each of them. Clearly, there's various factors involved, but there's 24,000 there. That's not too difficult to count. And generally, you'd get an attendance given to you halfway through the second half, and here we are two nights later and Celtic are still covering up for what the attendance was. So I think there's a lot of people bought tickets and didn't go, so I think there's a lot more than 24,000 tickets sold, but folk didn't need too much encouragement from the collective not to go. It's an unattractive fixture, an unattractive time. When's the last time you were entertained and generally enjoyed watching a Celtic match? And I think 2025 is almost a blank. There's a few minor highlights and things, but not many. So folk don't need too much encouragement, and the collective caught the mood at the time. And if the collective hadn't had that vote on Tuesday night and announced it Wednesday morning, we wouldn't have been treated to Brian Wilson's appearance on Thursday night. And lo and behold, 20 years on the Celtic board, and we find out he's heavily involved in transfer activity January. Or could it be the former Labour politician was lying through his teeth? Who knows? Maybe as believable as bumping into four lads in the city centre last Wednesday night, having a jolly exchange, a fearless and frank exchange of views. I respect you lads. You lads respect me. We're all part of the Celtic family. Let's go and win this league now. Laughable stuff. So, well done. If nothing else, the collective got Brian Wilson in front of the cameras and showed us how utterly inept he is as interim chairman. A worthy successor for the last chairman. And then anyone in any doubt about Brian Wilson's capabilities, they just needed to look at BBC Scotland on Sunday morning, a guy totally out of his depth. So well done the collective. I'm not sure what the next moves are, but not another penny has been very successful. The boycott call was very successful, and it was great that we learned that Brian Wilson had contacted supporter groups except the Celtic Collective. So well done to the Green Brigade and the boys for turning down the chance to speak with Brian Wilson this week. Unless he speaks to the Celtic Fans Collective, he's wasting his time. There'll be a few guys that'll be happy to have tea and biscuits and have a couple of Ibrox tickets dangled in front of them. But the Collective are staying fairly resolute. They've had another impact, and the clock is ticking seriously towards season ticket renewals. So that would be a concern for them, that there is don't forget, there's probably about 2,000 Dundee fans at that match on Saturday. The best part of 20,000 Celtic fans that went to cup ties last season didn't go to Saturday's cup ties. So food for thought, and another success for the Collective and another failure for the Celtic board, who are doing a fantastic job for the Collective.
Well, before I go over to James, David C., Joe, do you have anyone in mind to run Celtic? Jesus Christ, are we still at this? God, fucking spare me.
I'm sure there's a guy, Mackay, who did quite a good job. I think he was in for 72 days, but that's just me. I'm not a board of director. I'm not a non-executive director. I'm not a recruitment specialist, but I reckon that you might be able to find someone that could run Celtic a little bit better than Michael Nicholson, Brian Wilson, and the rest of the waste of spaces, filling suits, claiming expenses, and Nicholson will be draining another 17 grand out of Celtic this week. So there's an answer for you, David. I'm not a recruitment specialist, but I think it's possible to find someone that could do a slightly better job.
Brian Wilson looks like he should be in Thunderbirds. And somebody else said he looked like Penfold from Danger Mouse. For those of you out there who remember Danger Mouse, that's a pretty accurate description. But, okay, James, let's get your thoughts on the boycott. Are you pretty much of the same mindset as Joe? You believe it was a resounding success?
First, the boycott was absolutely a success. And I'll pivot back to telling you why it was a success once I get coverlings off my chest here. And I'm sure you guys know what I'm going to say. Brian Wilson said quite a week. Proving to all of us that he's as shit at politics as he is at being executive director of Celtic. I thought that his Celtic TV interview was one of the most cringy things I've ever seen in my life. It was unintentionally hilarious for any number of reasons. Sitting there talking about unity, but only inviting certain handpicked fan organisations with the explicit intention of splitting them off to the Collective and trying to divide the opposition to the board. So his play for unity didn't convince anybody, really. His poor young boy's story is a beauty. It's a beauty. Do you know any about political messaging? This is what they call the "I met a guy" story. And the reason it's called that is because you hear politicians doing versions of it all the time. Tony Blair was brilliant at it, for example. I met a nurse in Cardiff who told me about her struggles, and I met a school teacher in Glasgow who, you know what I mean? The odd day one version of it or another, and his version is one of the worst I've ever heard in my entire life. It makes Donald Trump's "a big bully man came up to me and hugged me and told me I'm the finest president in the history of the country" look almost, you know, altruistic. It was self-serving. It was ludicrous. It was presenting himself as "I am the humble spokesman for the people." And it was such utter nonsense. And if you know anything about political messaging, you've seen it so many times. You've seen the good versions and the bad, and his is one of the worst I have ever witnessed. And then this weekend, wow. It's the most jaw-droppingly obvious mistake I think I have seen in a long time from a political figure. Peter Mandelson is almost brought down the British government over the course of the last week. Now, there are literally dozens of senior politicians in Scotland and beyond who worked with Mandelson and know Mandelson implicitly and know every detail of that period. Gordon Brown could have came on. Douglas Alexander would have came on. You know, half of the Scottish office would have happily taken the BBC's call and gone on there. But they phoned Brian Wilson, and Brian Wilson never thought there was anything sus about that. He never thought there was anything sus about him being brought on there to talk about an institutional cover-up of a guy's friend with a paedophile. Right? Never saw the obvious bear trap there and walked straight into it. Now, what I think is amazing, that over the last 24 hours, as I've been trying to digest the enormity of that mistake, right, is that I didn't know how many people would spot it as an obvious mistake, right? Some people would blame the BBC, and the BBC, by the way, are pieces of shit for ever pulling a stunt like that in the first place. And if there's ever any reason for banning them for Celtic Park, that's it right there. That's it right there, that they actually got our chairman on there under false pretenses so they could ambush him with a question about a scandal that's still in legal dispute right now, right? And which is in the verge of being settled in a proper and honourable fashion at last, right? So I wondered how many people would actually see the utter insanity of what he did. And I'm gratified that so many people spotted it immediately. He should never have put himself in that position. That it was such an obvious error. Because I hoped that it was going to just be political geeks like me who were like, what were you even thinking? Everybody spotted it. Except him. Except the chairman of Celtic. I just cannot believe it. I'm astounded. I'm gobsmacked. Obviously, I'm pissed at the BBC. But it's one of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen. Brian Wilson is a complete and utter fucking muppet for walking into that. It was so obvious. It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. This is the guy we have running the club. The boycott has given us what we needed most in going in there to speak to him. It's given fans leverage, right? Because if they do have the guts to meet the collective now goes in there as the representative of a huge section of our support that's already shown a willingness to vote with its feet. That gives the collective tremendous power at that meeting. Tremendous power. If he's got the guts to meet them. And if he doesn't have the guts to meet them, that's another win for the collective. That shows that they're running scared. That shows that they're cowards. That shows that they're no interested in proper engagement. I've never seen people making a bigger mess. Even the Labour Party, National Labour Party, is in a better state and in less of a mess than this lot. And we have a lesser ability to shoot itself in the foot. It's one of the most phenomenal flabbergasting weeks I've ever seen from our club in terms of, you know, not even football related, but in the whole politics of Celtic relationship. It's absolutely incredible. These are the people running Celtic, and there are actually sections of support that are happy with that. They think this is great. They think it can continue like this.
James, Brian Wilson's a good Celtic man. He's a great Celtic man. He's been going to Celtic games for 30 years.
The same argument's being made for Keir Starmer right now, right? That he's a good man, that he's a decent man, that he's a man with genuinely good intentions and everything else, right? And I keep thinking of two things. I keep thinking Logan Roy telling Kendall Roy, sometimes it is a big dick competition because business and politics are a knife fight in the mud, right? And that is an excellent summation of the business that Keir Starmer's in. And I keep on thinking of Blake and Glenn Ross telling Moss, good man, I don't give a shit. Good father, then fuck off and play with your kids. It doesn't matter how good a Celtic man he is. He is manifestly unfit to be Celtic chairman, just as Michael Nicholson is unfit to be CEO. It's just a fact. Doesn't matter what their good intentions are. Doesn't matter if they're good people. Can they do the job? And the answer's fucking no. Absolutely not. No way.
And guys, don't forget, let's give a good shout out to Lawrence Donegan, you know, and his sniping from the sidelines and asking Peter Kelly if he attends games at Celtic Park. I mean, that was an own goal. Was that an own goal? Fuck me, that was an own goal. Because Peter really put him in his place. And, you know, we've had Peter on the show here. And to be fair to Peter, he's a decent guy. He tells it like it is. But by God, if somebody puts him in a corner, can he come out fucking swinging? You know? And he did. He really put Lawrence Donegan in his place, that's for sure. So we'll have to have him on again anyway, because he's a great contributor anytime he has been on. So look, guys, we will move on to, obviously, the Scottish Cup quarterfinal draw last night. Really, really threw a cat amongst the pigeons. We're aware of that. We've talked it through. We understand the gravity of those games that run from the 26th of February up to the 7th of March. Yeah, season.
My God.
Yeah. My season. Yeah, sure. Look, there's somebody always fucking happy clapping, James. We know that. But we will. We know what how important these fixtures are and how season defining they are going to be. But the Ox is finally in the building. And it's about time he gets let out of his paddock. Because, let's be fair, these particular three games, the Ibrox side in the league, Aberdeen away, and the Ibrox side in the cup, if Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain wants to make a mark at Celtic, that's the perfect opportunity. He's been there. He's done it. He's played in high-profile games. He's won Champions Leagues. So if he wants to show Scotland, anyway, and the Scottish Premiership what he's made of, then that's the perfect opportunity. So I will go to you first, Joe. He is here now. He will have a part to play. Do you feel that that particular run of fixtures will be a good opportunity for him to show us what he can do?
He doesn't have any option.
Yeah, well, there's that too.
His Celtic career and Celtic season will be defined by those matches, and he's got very little time to get ready. So let's hope it's been high-intensity training at Arsenal, because he has to be involved against Livingston on Wednesday night at some point. I don't think he'll be involved at Kilmarnock. It'll be very limited involvement at Kilmarnock playing. I mean, he's played at a pretty high level. Going down to Kilmarnock and playing in plastic, it's just a nonsense. Perhaps this is the last season of plastic pitches in Scottish foot. In the top flight, I suspect they'll still be around next season. After that, we've got Stuttgart at home. He's not involved in that. Then we get Hibs at home, and then it's Stuttgart away, and then that run of fixtures. So realistically, the Ox has got Livingston at home on Wednesday, Hibs the following weekend, or the weekend after, and then it's that run of fixtures. So I'll keep saying that the standard football in the Scottish Premiership is absolutely dire. It's grim. It's in a par with League Two or the National League in England for the most part. And some people seem to think that it's improved this season. Well, the Ibrox club won one out of eight games in the Europa League. Aberdeen didn't. Aberdeen get two draws and four defeats in the conference. I think they finished second bottom of the conference. The standard up here is grim. Hopefully the Ox is ready for it and he can add something, because it's badly needed. The Ox, Ingles and McGregor might be a midfield partnership of some substance. Beyond that, we don't have too many options. But as I say, I'd like to see us go back to that 4-4-2. But time is very sparse for the Ox. Again, if we were a well-run club, we would have had him in. We could have had him in December when we heard good reports back from what he was doing at Arsenal. We could have had him in at any time in January. But since Brian Wilson and Michael Nicholson are incapable of doing their job, Martin O'Neill came in at the death and used his contacts to find out that the Ox might be close to fitness. But it's a bit of a mystery why Fulham, West Ham, Brentford or a London club never signed him. Sure, there might be some ambition that can come up to Celtic and win things, but we heard this interview. His partner had a daughter, I think, 4 weeks ago. I think playing for any of those London clubs in the Premier League would have been a nice option for him, but it is what it is. He's a Celtic player. Hopefully he's involved against Livingston. If it's 20 minutes coming off the bench, then we need to see more of him against Hibs 10 days afterwards, and then it's do or die, those three fixtures. So we'll see how it goes. There's nothing. Don't go with any comparisons to Aaron Moy, Aaron Ramsey, James McCarthy. The Ox is the Ox, and he'll do it his way. And hopefully he's not James McCarthy or Aaron Ramsey, but it's up to the player himself. He's 32 years old, hasn't played since last May, but you would hope he's been involved in decent training at Arsenal since November.
Yeah, I mean, look, Mikel Arteta has been talking, well, you know, prior to him coming up to us, Mikel Arteta was speaking very highly of him. So clearly that's the impression that he's been getting of him while he was training with Arsenal. But the one thing that I would say that I feel has stood out an awful lot, you know, with regards to his signing for us, is there has been no mass hysteria like there was when Aaron Ramsey came. You know, it's been very balanced. It's been very level-headed kind of talk about what he's going to contribute or what he might not contribute. Most Celtic fans are being quite astute about it. They're just reserving their judgment until they actually see, and that's, you know, until they actually see what he's capable of. I personally feel he'll have something to contribute. He's a quality player. If he's fit, then I feel he will be able to contribute something to Celtic. Tough and all as that might be in a league of the quality, as you know, as Joe outlined, of League Two, you know. So James, do you feel that if he's match fit and he obviously gets those kind of runouts that Joe mentioned in the upcoming games, do you feel that that pivotal week from the 1st to the 7th of March would be his opportunity to really shine?
That's made for him, isn't it? The script is right for it. I'm going to echo something that you said. Paulina wrote a piece this morning about how Celtic's viewed outside of Scotland, and particularly England, with those tossers on talk radio or whatever it was the other day, talking about us getting relegated for the English Championship, pitch like that. It's like garbage that these people talk. But she wrote about that today. And one of the things about the Oxlade-Chamberlain thing that I'm sort of pleased about, but also think is quite instructive about our media, is that there hasn't been a big hoopla and a big hype about it. Because it really was embarrassing a few years ago, like reading how Aaron Ramsey, this guy who had barely kicked the ball for years and had bummed about all these various leagues and flopped at all these various clubs, was just going to come up here and dominate Scottish football because he was a former Premier League player and he was going to do this, he was going to do that. And it was quite nauseating and embarrassing reading that. And I wondered what some of the journalists thought that said about Scottish football, that they were writing such obvious garbage. And there's been none of that here. But then there's no any of that because of the team he's signing for. If he was signing on the dotted line or at Ibrox, you would get all of that and more. My God, we'd be getting sick of it already. We'd be sick reading it already. And it is very low-key, and it's very, very under the radar, and that is exactly how we want it. That's exactly how we need it. And it does him good, and it does the team good as well, that it's not being overhyped, and he's just coming in to be another player. But he can be an effective player. But it's going to be about how he's used and when he's used. We're not going to get 90 minutes out of this guy, probably for the whole season. So it's about when you give him 60 minutes. Do you bring him on early in a game and try and get the early goals that break down the defence? I think at Ibrox, that might be a good strategy. Do you bring him on later in the game when their team's a bit more tired and when they're prone to making mistakes and you want somebody who can get into the penalty box and open the defence up a bit? And it'll depend how Martin wants to manage a guy and manage the minutes it gets. But if we do it right, it'll be very effective. It'll be a good signing if we get the balance right. But the balance has got to be everything. He's not going to be a 90-minute player. He's not going to play every week. He's not got the legs for that right now. If he gets another year, you may see something really special next season. But for now, we just want to, for now, we've signed a really good impact player.
That's a good point you made there, James. That if he does, you know, the option for the extra year, if he does take that, and, you know, look, obviously, I suppose that hinges on the next couple of months being successful for him. But, you know, it is good that it wasn't just till the end of the season, and that he has that option. So, we've all kind of agreed on the subject that if it is the perfect opportunity for him to shine, but we're only going to see how astute a signing he was when we see how he fits into the squad and how he plays. The one thing you will say that is very positive is, you know, he trusts Martin O'Neill, and obviously Martin O'Neill trusts him. And, you know, when I saw his interview and he spoke about the conversations that he had with Martin O'Neill, you know, you could believe that Martin O'Neill would talk very straight to the guy and tell him what he expects of him and what he feels he can do if he fits into the squad. So I feel that combination and that sort of chemistry between Martin O'Neill and him could be a winning formula for us. I would hope anyway. So we'll move on to our next and final point for tonight's show, which is the upcoming fixtures for midweek and the fixtures on the weekend. And obviously the big game tomorrow night is the Edinburgh Derby. Obviously, we only have to look after ourselves. We only have to keep on winning. We're playing Livingston on Wednesday night. But tomorrow night's game could have a big bearing on how things go. It could blow the title race wide open. We're dependent on Hibs doing us a favour and getting a result against them. They did it already, so there's no doubting they could do it again if they wanted to. But then, obviously, as we alluded to earlier on, the Ibrox side travelled to Motherwell, and they're playing a very informed Motherwell side at the moment. And Motherwell will be feeling that they can get something out of that too, and they'll be feeling that they can, Jens Bertolasco he's done a fantastic job with a limited budget at Motherwell. He's rattled them at the start of the season. Okay, they had David Dickinson on their side for the game at Ibrox. Obviously, we know the referees for tomorrow night aren't exactly what we'd have hoped for, or for Wednesday night aren't exactly what we'd have hoped for. But Joe, few pivotal fixtures in midweek. How do you look? Ours will probably take care of itself, but how do you see the other two going, and what kind of bearing are they going to have on the transfer, or not transfer, but title race?
I'm not too bothered about either. Obviously, I hope Mother will win. If it's nothing each, I'll take that. That'll be a great result. But I'm not rooting for Hibs in any particular way. Hearts are at Ibrox at the weekend, and you might say, well, if they get beat by Hibs, they'll go to Ibrox really determined. But our biggest threat to the title is at Ibrox, and Hearts and Hibs, at the minute, it's relevant, but I don't think the big picture is going to be that relevant. So I'll have a pass on that one. It's not Hearts. We get Hearts at Celtic Park. Hearts dropped points to St Mirren last week. Hearts will probably drop other points. So I hope Hearts go to Ibrox in good spirits, and if that means beating Hibs, so be it. I think Motherwell are very capable of getting something on Wednesday, but with Stephen McLean and John Beaton, they'll need to be in their absolute best. So, I'll take enough from each in that. The main thing is Celtic on Wednesday. If Celtic can score 3+ goals, that's a good sign. If it's a 1-0 or 2-0, then I think we're still riding our luck. So the main match this week is Celtic against Livingston. If they can score 4 or more, then there might be the makings of something there. But that would put to the test at Kilmarnock. It's rarely it's never a pleasant football match. It's always grim and tough, with the exception of a 5-0 victory to win the league with Brendan Rodgers' first season back. So the main match is entirely us, and I hope to see better signs of football. I hope to see a 4-4-2, and I hope to see a couple of goals, a good few goals.
Yeah, well, you would feel that the Livingston game should be an opportunity to bang in a few. But then again, we did say that about the Dundee game, and we saw what happened there. I think when we were doing our score predictions last week, I had said comfortable 3-4-0, and James was kind of on the same page. And you felt pretty much that it would be comfortable, Joe. It turned out to be nothing like that at all. So, which doesn't necessarily mean that Wednesday night's going to be a walk in the park either, you know. So, but look, for Hearts' title aspirations are pivotal this week. The results, I think this will either decide whether they remain in the race or not this week. I believe that much anyway. They could drop out of serious contention this week. If they lose tomorrow night and they lose at Ibrox, that'll blow their season to smithereens, really. Obviously, as well, we're playing Kilmarnock at the weekend, aren't we? So we have that fixture at the weekend as well. James, what's your thoughts on the upcoming games? It's an interesting week, to be fair, isn't it?
They're all interesting weeks right now, mate. I mean, it's
really, yeah.
I expect us to win. The more I expect us to win at the weekend, but I don't expect either to be particularly comfortable. It would be nice if we could have a statement result, but no, no luck. It'll be the rank kind of fucking statement as we've made so many times this season. The other results elsewhere. I think Obviously, I want Hibs to beat Hearts. Obviously, I want Hibs to beat Hearts. It's not even up for debate. And obviously, I genuinely don't care who wins at Ibrox. The two of them can kick the ever-living shit out of each other, and we will be the only beneficiaries as long as we win our games. Because that might be the crucial thing, sending us into Hell Week. See, we only come out of Hell Week with 4 points. That's it. We come out of Hell Week with 4 points and a place in the Scottish Cup semi-final, I think, then it's ours to lose. The whole season is ours to lose. But we need to win the games up to that to make it a possibility. The game between them and Hearts at the weekend is an absolute no-lose for us, no matter who wins. But Joe is right about one thing. The minute Hearts fall behind, their season just disintegrates. One of the things that has kept Hearts in it for so long has been that they've been in the lead. And they've no relinquished the lead since they got in the lead. And once the day, especially having had such a huge advantage over both teams, I think Hearts' season is over. I don't think they'll recover if they've gone behind. And then it becomes a straight shootout between us and the other mob. And I still think, over the course, we're a better team than them. We're a better manager than them. Better individual players than them. But there's a lot of X factors in there, of course.
As we all know, definitely. So, score predictions. Joe, you're never one for predicting scores, but do you feel they're going to be tight or comfortable?
2-0, 2-0, maybe.
I'll go for... Celtic Livingston, I'll go for 3-0, and Kilmarnock, I'll be a 1-0, 2-1, or maybe a 1 each. It's not a game to look forward to in any aspect.
No, not with the plastic pitch. But thankfully, this should be the last season of plastic pitches, shouldn't it?
I'm more worried about being kicked off the pitch. I'm more worried about that. Yeah. That's a bigger concern for
And once again, what's going to be kind of crucial in that is who the refereeing team is, and I'm sure we'll be given another, you know, very pro-Celtic referee setup. Not. I'll give my predictions. I think we'll comfortably stroll past Livingston 4-0. I'm going to put it out there because we do need that statement win. Kilmarnock, you know something, Neil McCann has never, ever really proven himself as a manager to me. I think he's shite, to be honest. No. So I feel if Celtic get in their groove in that game, and if we can get an early goal, I think we could win that one comfortably too. I'm going to be optimistic. I'm going to try and be optimistic from here on out. In that, you know, like at the outset of the show, I said that Martin knows what he has to play with now. And I think one of our commenters said throughout the show there that the result on Saturday night against Dundee was a turning point, you know, that we push on from here. So I feel that this should be our week to push on, and hopefully results will go our way in other games to put us right back into the mix. So look, guys, that wraps it up for tonight. Steady 350 on the live show tonight. If you like what we do, folks, like and subscribe, keep them coming. We will keep the content coming every Monday night. We got a bit of jip last week for doing it on a Thursday night off the cuff, but it worked out fairly well in the end, so we can't complain. And I don't think our commenters and the people who viewed the show complained too much about it. So we will wrap it up for this week. And do you have anything there you want to say before we go, Joe? Or
nope.
I thought you wanted to make a point. So look, we'll wrap it up, and we will touch base again next Monday, and I'm sure we'll have a hell of a lot to talk about then. See you next Monday, guys. Have a good one.